Now, I'm very pleased to welcome Shirley Baker, whose book about her sailing adventures off the Essex coastline. Aulus? Can't pronounce it. Come on.
Aulus.
Aulus, ruler of the winds, has just undergone its third reprint. Not bad going, seeing as you kind of pushed into putting pen to paper in the first place, eh, Shirley?
Well, I wasn't exactly pushed because I love sailing so much. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to write.
Right. So how did you come to book writing then?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing poetry, and especially poems about the sea, because the sea is so inspiring. It's different every day, and there's the bird life and the waves and everything. Mm. And my friend, local artist Sheila Appleton, suggested that I put them together into a small booklet, which I did, and printed it out after another local artist, Penny Hawker, had added some illustrations. I was rather cheeky, actually, and took it to the Southend Book Fair, and it was so lucky to be seen by John Debenham and Andrew Summers, the publishers of the Essex 100 series. And they suggested that if I could write stories about the places we sailed to together and include the poems, they would be very interested in it. So that was a challenge. Well, it took me 3 years to do this, but I so enjoyed it. And it was made easier because I've always kept a daily log of when we're sailing and the weather conditions and where we sailed. And also the encouragement of John and Andrew was amazing. And plus, of course, Andrew's superb photography of the cover have all helped the portrayal of the book.
Now, it's clear from the book that you love sailing, so you've got to tell us how and when you started out.
Well, my husband Paul and I have been sailing our boat, which was built in 1971, for 24 years. And before that, we had an open dinghy for 4 years.
Now, I can imagine it's not exactly a cheap hobby, if hobby is the right word. Perhaps activity is better. So how did you start out?
Well,
rob a bank.
No, well, actually, for our little dinghy, that wasn't so dear. I think it was only, well, I say only, but it was about £400, and I bought it from a lady from work. But then We began to feel we wanted something more. My brother Derek, who sails a proper sailing yacht, he kept nagging us to try a larger yacht, and we had to cash all our savings in to buy it, all our granny bonds, and my mother lent us £1,000 because the bank wouldn't help at that time. They were very fussy who they helped.
And you should have told them it was a floating asset.
Well, a lot of husbands choose boats with themselves in mind, and they're usually very skittish and bearing comfort. And then they wonder why their wives won't go sailing with them. So we cashed in all our savings, and then we started our search for a boat. And we started small with a dinghy, as you know, and then we got our larger boat.
How much would you expect to pay now for a dinghy? Because they're still not cheap. I mean, £400 is £400.
Yes.
And that was some time ago, I imagine.
Yes, it was. But now, there's the second-hand mirror dinghies that can be found. Andy Seedhouse's boatyard at Woodbridge sells a lot of these, I believe. And you can buy one for about £300. And we learnt on one similar to this. And our granddaughter, now aged 13, also learned on one in Devon. They're ideal little boat to learn the rudiments of sailing on.
But, of course, you talk about learning the rudiments, but, of course, sailing isn't quite like driving a car, is it?
No.
You've got to learn a lot more than that.
Well, of course, with a car, you haven't got to think about tides or wind so much. Mm. And you do need a rowing dinghy to get to your main sailing boat moored out at sea.
Yeah.
And although a lot of people do have outboard motors, but you don't really need one. And Paul, he rows out, and if you choose your sailing trip with care, it's nice just to row out to your own boat. And don't forget that sometimes two of you have to lift it into the sea. So that's another point. You don't want it too heavy, like an outboard motor would make it.
I can imagine. So how did you come to choose your present vessel?
Oh, we were ever so fussy. We spent a long time. We read the yachting magazines, because in some of them, people write what they think of the different makes.
Mm.
And we looked around many boats. Some of them were totally unsuitable. Like, we were both working at the time, and sometimes you had to crawl around. They didn't even have standing room. But what I felt was most essential was for it to have two hatches fore and aft, because you never know, if you had a fire, you need to get out. And this is an ideal way of, in an emergency, getting out. And we also wanted a comfortable cabin, two fairside bunks, an adequate headroom. And eventually, by reading notice boards outside yacht clubs, we spotted our ideal vessel, Aeolus. And as I said, she'd been built in 1971 on Canvey Island and took her name from Greek mythology. Her name means ruler of the winds, which I have called my book Ruler, Aeolus, Ruler of the Winds.
Ah, right. Now obviously, you learnt a fair bit from sailing a dinghy for 4 years, but there's got to be a huge difference in handling a craft like Aeolus, has there not?
Oh, yes, yes indeed, because if you're in a little sailing dinghy and you feel it's going a bit choppy and you want to right it, you can just sit on the opposite side of it. But on a large sailing boat, of course, this is impossible. So, but you've got to take it slowly. Don't expect to get in one and sail straight away. You just can't cast off and hope for the best. You need to read a few books and be able to navigate once you get away from the immediate shoreline. And there's lots of hazards out at sea, which you've got to be careful of.
I can imagine. So perhaps you can give us a few examples of these hazards.
Yeah.
you'll frighten everybody else, mate.
I don't want to frighten you. Yeah. And I mean, we're just an ordinary couple, and if we can do it, so can you. But the first thing is the weather.
Uh-huh.
And you'd be amazed how quickly it can change. I give an example in my book, how a fog came down out of nowhere after the Coast Guard had given out that it was a lovely, sunny, bright day. We all know what these Coast Guards are like. But anyway...
well, it probably was when he said it.
but he was still saying it, and it was foggy, and you couldn't see in front of your nose. And we had to get back to Lee, along the Blackwater and into the sea for Lee-on-Sea. And we came across a huge object, and we realised it was Southend Pier. But luckily, not only the weather, but there's one of the things is these oyster pots out at sea, because they're just indicated by tiny little black flags, and some of them don't even have that. And they're so annoying, because you can catch one under your engine, and it can really foul you up. And then also under the sea, old forts and old wrecks and large cargo ships and, of course, sandbanks. Yeah. So you've got to keep your charts up to date if you can.
Now, you mentioned the forts, of course. They're sticking out largely out of the sea, I guess, rather than under the sea, but you've certainly got to keep an eye on them. Now, you've been sailing around the coastline for a good many years. Would you like to mention just a few of the most memorable places you've visited and why they mean so much to you?
Well, you can't beat our coastline for its beauty and history. And although we go to the same places every year, it's surprising what's happened in that year. And our favourites are Brightlingsea, because there's a very helpful harbour master to see you in, and that a bit of help goes a long way when you're in a rather large sailing boat,
I can imagine.
And he will guide you in, but you've got to radio him up and tell him that you're coming, but he's so helpful. And also at Brightlingsea, they have the most glorious floral displays. And then there's Walton-on-the-Naze with its Titchmarsh Marina. Again, they're very helpful. And not only that, but if you get fed up with cooking a little meal on your little stove in the boat, they've got a lovely, reasonable restaurant overlooking the harbour. And Frinton is within walking distance. But Ipswich is now our favourite.
It's not in Essex.
Not in Essex, no, I'm so sorry. But it's our favourite because our granddaughter, Natalia, mentioned in the book, who's a little madam, very daring, but came to visit us, has moved there with her husband and gorgeous little great-granddaughter, Skylar. And our daughter, also from Zimbabwe, coming home, has now bought a house in the area. And so that was lovely because it's in within walking distance of the marina. And when they come on board for lunch, which is absolutely a lovely idea. So that is those are our most favourite places, yes.
It sounds fantastic.
It is.
So what do you miss most when you're coming ashore, particularly after the final voyage of the season?
Well, personally, what I miss is the fresh air. Because you don't realise how much you spend indoors all the time. And we've only been back from our holiday for a couple of weeks, but I still miss it, the lovely fresh air that's all around you. And the cry of the seabirds. And but I think that is the main thing which I miss, the complete lovely air. And of course, that's if it's not stormy, of course.
I was going to say, yes.
Yeah.
What would you say would be the thing that you most dislike? Would it be bad weather?
No, I think you have to take bad weather on the chin because, I mean, we were out this year just approaching the River Orwell and out of nowhere a terrific gale blew up. But actually it did inspire me to write a poem about it, but that's beside the point. But yes, I suppose really it's these oyster pots because they can do so much damage. Yeah, they can, and that is what I... don't lie.
Now, Shirley, through your book and what you've said today, you might well have tempted other potential mariners to consider following in your footsteps. And I know that apart from describing many of your voyages, both in verse as well as prose, you also explain the importance of looking after the vessel, her engines, etc.
Yes, but, that's right.
If anyone was thinking about taking up this activity, what would be the one vital piece of advice that you would give?
Well, the one vital advice I would give is to take a lot of care in choosing your boat. Look round. I mean, you've got to look round. It's rather like buying a home, really, a house. But look round hundreds, and you will... Well, not hundreds, no, but look around quite a few.
Yeah.
And go aboard and, if possible, get the owner to take you out on them and get a feel for it. Well, I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but as soon as I stood on Aeolus, I knew I'd be happy on her. She was a sturdy old boat. Mm. Well, that suits me, but it wouldn't suit someone that was more daring and younger, would it? I mean, you know, I love Aeolus. I really do. And my son has got his eye on her for when Paul and I can't do it anymore. And at first, I'm a bit annoyed when he said, how many more years do you think you'll be sailing, Mum? But now I'm rather glad because it does break my heart when I see neglected boats and boats just left to rot by their owners. So it's rather nice now, I think.
Now, you're the radio operator, are you not? Isn't that one of the things that you do?
Yes, I am.
Because that's quite important as well.
Well, it's about the only thing... Well, actually, you see, Paul is a very practical person. I'm so spoiled. He does do a lot. But he says, well, your company... And you've got to write the poetry. But I thought I must do a bit more than this, apart from polishing the boat, which I do occasionally. But, yes, I took the radio operator's exam because we did have a small radio and I wanted to be efficient on it because that could help you if you ever hit trouble. Not that we ever have, but... and it's also... Paul's just touching a bit of wood. But it's also handy for keeping in contact with anybody that you might be sailing with.
Mm.
And then it's also handy for calling up, say, the port of Ipswich. Mm. You need to call them up to give them a notice that you're coming through. It's a very useful little tool. And, I mean, you might say, oh, well, we can use our phone, but your phone may not have that range so on. So, yes, and it's well worth doing one of these courses. You get to see other people doing it and you learn the correct procedure, which, although it's not essential, it is nice to think, well, yes, I'm using the right words here.
Right, well, many thanks for that. Perhaps you could just remind us of where the book can be purchased and the price.
The price at the moment is $7.99,
right,
and it can be purchased from any bookshop or Amazon. The ISB number is 978095522589. I'll repeat that. 978095522589. 589. But it is now, it must be printed again because we've only got a few left. So if you want one, I should get out there and get it.
They'll be into the fourth one soon.
Yeah.
Anyway, perhaps we could finish by you reading one of your verses. Now, you could choose whichever one you like. I just had a look and I thought about the Fair Weather Sailor.
Yes, I do like that. That Fair Weather Sailor has actually been on YouTube.
Right.
So, but this is my favourite because it's about one of the many characters that you do meet when you're sailing, and this character is George. Mm. A lot of sailors will know him, George, the harbour master of the Ramsholt Arm stretch of the river, and he won't mind me saying, but he is an old gentleman, and he's been doing this for a long time, and his father was the harbour master before him. And I said to him, "Oh, George, I've written a poem about you." And he said, "Not interested. I don't like poetry." But when it was in my book and he actually read it, he's bought the book and he's shown all his relatives. And I think, oh, that's lovely.
So all his relatives are buying the book now, you see.
Yes, they are.
So what's the poem called?
The poem is called Harbour Master, Ramsholt Arms.
Good stuff.
He guards this stretch of water on an ever-present stand, part of the scenery of sky and sea and land. Ensconced in an old boat, but such a presence he directs with pointing finger and strong authority. Weathered brown his face and creased deep his eyes, the highest and the lowest boat comes under his surmise. He will guard this harbour still until his dying day, and even then his presence will the physical outweigh. For at that time, when he is gone, his memory will be there, reflecting in the swirling waves and in a seagull's stare.
Thank you very much. That's beautiful. I'm not surprised he likes that. Good stuff. Thanks very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you very much, Scott.